Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 9th day of January 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening, tuning in, downloading, sharing, spreading the word, making this thing go viral, making it go like the 1918 Spanish flu or whatever year that was. It wasn't a good year, whatever year it was. I hope to have a slightly better impact on the world, but that's just me. I'm old-fashioned. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, spelled like it doesn't sound, D-E-R-E-K. What else? I've got the big interview scheduled for today, but I don't want to say who it's with because I don't want to jinx it. You'll just have to tune in tomorrow to find out who it is with, but it's going to be about $1,000 an hour. Not really. Nobody's getting paid $1,000 an hour or paying $1,000 an hour, but it's not often I get to pick the brain of somebody who probably charges $1,000 an hour. That's not really that much of a hint, although it'll kind of give you the sense of what field that person is in. We got a lot of stuff to get to and a bunch of things to talk about. But first, let me just announce that this is the last episode ever of the podcast because I am joining the royal family. I found out they had an opening and I applied and I got it. So I'm out of here, suckers. No, I'm just kidding. They'd never have me. But God, what a life. Just say, I'm going to walk away from all my responsibilities, but keep them checks rolling in, Grandma. We'll talk about that coming. The Royal Family is such a scam. It's such a scam. But hey, man, it's their tax money. If that's what they want to do with it, knock yourselves out. I mean, is it really all that different than what corporate America and my corporate world does to Democrats and their untalented children, what with Chelsea and Hunter getting, you know, millions upon millions of dollars for just existing? Why should the British be any different? Like I said, we got a lot of things to get into. The reaction of the left. It's always the reaction of the left that's absolutely insane. It's like they always expect Twitter Trump to show up everywhere, and their responses are based on their expectations of Twitter Trump. And then Twitter Trump doesn't show up in real life, and they can't think on their feet. They can't adapt. They can't change. So we'll get into the reaction of the left to the president's speech in a second. But first, let me tell you about our lovely, lovely sponsor, Life Change Tea. Let me take a sip of my daily cup of Life Change Tea. As a matter of fact, yes, Life Change Tea. You go to getthetea.com and you say, well, what do I got tea all over the place. Tea's everywhere. You can get tea anywhere. You can't get Life Change Tea anywhere except for getthetea.com. And it's not your typical tea. It's an expectorant. It means it's the tea that makes you go. And you need to go because you've got a whole bunch of stuff backed up in you. You need to get regular. You need to clean that out so that you can absorb all the nutrients in the foods that you digest. You're not actually digesting all of it. You're leaving a lot on the table, if you will. And with the heavy processing that we have these days, there's less nutrition in the food to begin with. Your body needs to absorb all of it that you possibly can. And there's stuff inside you that's sounds unpleasant, I know, but it's blocking your ability to absorb the nutrients that you're eating. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. A cup a day keeps the stuff away, shall we say. Cleans you out, keeps you regular, and allows your body to absorb the nutrition that you're consuming. And it gives you more energy, makes you feel better, gets you on the go. I have this cold, which it's only manifest itself in my sinuses. But otherwise, I feel great, and I attribute a lot of that to Life Change Tea, the energy that I can muster with, you know, 4 hours of sleep at night. until the weekends is in part due to Life Change Tea. So you go to getthetea.com. You enter promo code Derek, my name, spelled just like the email, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout, and you get 10% off your order. You can't beat that deal, and you'll be thanking me while you're doing jumping jacks. All right, getthetea.com, promo code Derek. Don't forget that. Okay, the president of the United States, Donald John Trump. Have you heard that Trump has been elected president? Breaking news a little while ago, but the way the news cycle goes, and as quickly as things are forgotten, you just got to kind of remind people You just kind of have to remind people occasionally. And apologies in advance. The longer I speak, the more congested I sound. Just the fact of the matter at the time. But the president of the United States came out at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It was more like 11:30. That he came. How hard is it? This always drives me nuts about presidents. You live where you work, dude. You can show up on time. You can. But the president showed up around 11:30. Nobody was as bad as Obama, but Trump being about 25 minutes late was pretty bad. President came out and gave his response to the Iranian mullahs. And apparently we've learned a lot more in the last 24 hours, which is why cable news is so awful at the beginning of anything that is breaking as it's breaking. So much of what we were told last night turned out not to be true. This is a massive attack. This was a that. This was the other thing. And the MSNBC was continually reporting that there were up to 20, 30, 40 American casualties, people killed by Iran's missiles. And turns out that four of them didn't make it out of Iran, and everything else hit empty buildings or empty space, because that's just kind of how it was. Well, now it turns out that there's more to it than we originally thought. It wasn't just Iranian incompetence. It may not have been Iranian incompetence at all. The Iranians tipped us off. You want to know how serious and how big of how this whole thing yesterday was for show, which was kind of what I was suspecting. You just have to learn that the whole thing was sort of staged for TV, if you will. It was set to for a domestic audience's consumption, like I said yesterday. The Iranians called the Iraqis to let them know what was being targeted, what to expect, and where to go. Of course, the Iraqis sharing the bases that were targeted with the Americans gave the Americans a kind of heads up. Now, it turns out that we already knew what was going on because of our intelligence sources and our satellites and all kinds of things. We could see what was going on. What we didn't know was the magnitude of the attack, how many missiles they were going to send, but we knew where they were targeting because we've intercepted their chatter and we knew where the missiles were coming from and everything. So it wasn't a surprise whatsoever. But the fact that Iran called Iraq and said, we don't want to kill any Iraqis, so we're letting you know that we're launching missiles into your country. And oh, by the way, we're going to hit these targets. So you might want to let the people at those targets know before they launched the missiles, tells you that this was, again, for domestic political consumption. When you rile up an angry mob, and I always say this, and this is sort of one of the points of my book and the warnings in my book, which is on sale for less than $10 right now on Amazon, by the way. It's really easy to get an angry mob riled up. It's really easy to create a mob, to get people worked up and to the streets and doing stupid things and following, doing things they never would otherwise do. It's much more difficult to control them once they're riled up. And the left in this country has learned that with Antifa violence. They've created this angry mob, and every once in a while it boils over with the James Hodgkinson shooting. They lie to their people, they scare the hell out of them, get them worked up, and every once in a while somebody pops off and does something crazy and evil. So they work this delicate balance. Well, Iran has to work this delicate balance too, because their people are already pissed off because they're oppressed. And the people, the minority that actually supports the regime, are suffering under economic sanctions, economic stagnation, massive inflation, shortages of all sorts of things. So they have to create an enemy to blame it all on. The old standby for the Middle East used to be the Jews. Oh, it's the fault of the Jews. All of these very wealthy rulers in these oil-rich countries, when they had a near monopoly on oil production, would allow for demonization of Israel. They would involve themselves in it, maybe not directly, but they certainly would passively do it and fund it mostly, the blaming of Israel. Now, why would, say, the royal family of, we'll just make up a country, what's a good name for a country? Saudi Arabia. There, that sounds fake enough. The country of Saudi Arabia, while the royal family is living large and high on the hog, the people in general, the normal people, the non-royal family members, are suffering. They're going without. And they see, well, they might see their royal fancy state-controlled media, but they might see, they might notice that, hey, wait a second, our leaders are living really freaking well. High on the hog, except probably not the hog, considering the Islamic view of pork. So they say, well, that's not right. Well, they didn't normally see that because of the state-controlled media, but the ruling class, the rich, moneyed elite, lived in fear of the anger that would brew in a country where, you know, the rich or the royals are stealing the money, not earning it through capitalism. They're oppressing the masses and living hypocritically large on their own on the massive fortune that they're taking out of the country. Well, the rulers know that you need to direct that anger somewhere, because sooner or later it could boil over and you don't want to be the target of it. Boy, howdy, let me tell you. So they used to demonize Israel. It's all Israel's fault. It was the West in general, but it was Israel's fault in specific. For whatever was going on in the country, if something went wrong, it was the Jews' fault. That allowed them to direct the anger away from them, deflect the anger away from them and towards Israel. It was a very useful foil. Well, for now, for at least Iran, it's still Israel to a certain extent because they've ingrained that too much into the people. But they also blame the United States for their problems, for their economic woes, because, you know, you get, what was it? We gave them something like $600 billion in the Iran deal, some ungodly sum of money that was larger than their gross domestic product. It was larger than the entirety of their economy. And what did they do with it? They helped spread the money around, not in a good way and not in a socialist way, trying to take care of people. They did it in a way to further their jihad against the civilized world. They spent it on terrorism. They spent it on the military. They spent it on military and fighting and terrorism in other countries. And the people in Iran don't like that a whole lot. So when they get medicine shortages because of embargoes and sanctions, the mullahs in Iran are terrified that the citizens of Iran will go, you know, if you guys stopped spreading all this money around the country and the planet, especially the region, trying to influence terrorism, trying to, you know, hurt or smite your enemies, if you stopped doing that crap, you could spend some of that money at home and the sanctions would be lifted and we could have medicine, we could have clean hospitals, we could have all sorts of wonderful things that we as human beings would really like to have. So they get pissed. That's the majority of the country. You get them perpetually pissed. That's fine as long as you maintain your minority of your country. You have to keep them pissed too. You have to keep them, they're more fanatical than pissed, but I think that those two are two sides of the same coin. So Iran is in a very delicate situation. They've told the whole country, most of the country doesn't buy that the U.S. is this evil country that's screwing them over. They don't like their own government, and they recognize that it's their government doing it, but they're powerless because they've been disarmed to do anything about it. It's the fanatics that you got to worry about. The fanatics, you got to keep their anger directed toward the United States, towards the other that you demonize. And if you, after a while, have convinced people that the United States is evil and the great Satan and must be destroyed and you are the ones to do it and so on and so forth and you are so pure and you will never stand up, well, if they kill your terrorist leader, your number two in command, if the great Satan does this, you can't just let it go, which would be the sensible thing to do, because they're, you know, 50 times bigger than you and could fart and blow up most of your military. But you can't do that because the zealots that help you maintain power by being the enforcement wing domestically of your terror organization might start to question your commitment to the cause if you let somebody that you've built up to be, you know, essentially a god here on Earth, a wonderful genius, tactician, military general, if you let his killing go because you'd get wiped off the face of the earth if you respond wrong, you have to respond somehow. You don't really have a choice. They painted themselves into a corner. So the response that we saw from Iran was essentially Iran doing what they had to do, absolutely had to do, so that they could say they did something. Now, domestically, they can still claim that they killed 40 Americans, which is absurd, but when you control the media, the people who believe you and believe your media won't go really searching around trying to find information that conflicts with what you've told them. Why would they? You tell them the truth. So that was the strategy behind it. That's why you call the Iraqis, which is essentially calling the Americans by proxy, because you don't want the hellfire coming back at you. You don't want to accidentally kill some Americans when you've been warned that that is the line. When the line was crossed, and that's why Soleimani was killed, is that he had the blood of Americans on his hand, fresh blood of Americans on his hand from December 22nd, 7th. So you have this really fine line Iran was trying to walk. And the Trump administration yesterday let them walk it. Which you may say, well, why not? If you've got the screws to them, why not put the maximum pressure on it? Why not taunt them more? Why not poke that bear? Why not continue to go after them? Why not tell the world that they, you know, they're weak and they're this and they're that and they're the other thing? Because honestly, at the end of the day, we don't really care who runs Iran, nor should we care who runs Iran, nor should we care who runs any country and how awful or oppressive they are to their own people, just like nobody would really care if this country was overrun by left-wingers and they began to oppress Americans. It's when they go outside, when they start impacting us, that we care. Now, that sounds horribly selfish and mean and nasty, and I understand that's just horrible, and how dare I? But it's real. And that's how nations should function. Now, nations can band together and apply pressure and say, we don't like the way you're treating your people, you should stop it. But it's not very often that they go, we don't like how you're treating your own people, so we're going to invade you. There's a big difference between the two. Despots in power want to maintain that power. They're already living large, so the sanctions don't really hit them. What limited resources a country has, be it medicine or food or anything, always goes to the top. And if there's anything left over, it goes on down to the bottom. So Iran was in a dangerous situation. And in the interest of stability, we let them get away with it. We let them do it. You bombed an abandoned or empty part of an airbase. Congratulations. Your victory is yours. You can go out there and say, as they said, that they slapped at the United States. Well, congratulations. You're a hero. If that makes you a hero in your own country, who cares? You're only a hero with the people who you've brainwashed, who you're really going to be a hero to anyway. And if Iran fell apart, or if the supporters of the regime and the followers of the mullah and the ayatollah had really been disgusted. If they knew the truth, they'd probably be disgusted by the response because it was weak. A man that they built up as a national treasure being killed, and the response was to bomb an empty building, is not really the strong image Iran portrays at home. But there's no guarantee that what would come next if Iran fell would be good for the United States either. It probably would be better. But in the interest of holding, it wouldn't be very stable. And in the interest of holding other actors at bay in the area, it's better to maintain than it is to shake things up. As I've said all week, all 2 weeks of this, is if change is going to come like that, it has to come from within. It cannot be started, precipitated by the United States, at least the good change. I don't know that the good people of Iran are ready to take over because they aren't ready to step up and take over. You have to fight for your liberty. You have to fight for your freedom. It cannot be handed to you. It can be assisted a little bit, but it has to be something you really want. So if it doesn't come internally, from internally, if it's not, you know, my God, we've traced the call, it's coming from inside the house, then it won't last. It won't work. So that's why I think that the administration let the Iranian story stand domestically, let them get away with their international posturing to a certain extent, telling a Western audience, telling the American people what had happened from our perspective, but not really pressing them on their failure and their weakness. Plus, I think there's a possibility, a probability, actually, that Iran will continue doing what they're doing, though not for a little while, and will hit back at some point through a proxy this time and claim a moral victory that way. It'll be mostly moral victories for Iran for a while because they know that the new sheriff in town isn't going to play that game. President Trump allowed the Iranians to get away with bombing or shooting down a drone. There were attacks set and ready to go. You remember that. And the president called them off. And he gave a valid justification. Whether or not it was a good one, whether or not it was acceptable, is up to the individual. But I think it's perfectly valid that they shot down something with nobody in it. You didn't harm an American. So they did economic sanctions. There may have been some cyber warfare going in there, but there was nobody killed over knocking a drone out of the sky. President Trump has always been very specific about drawing a line between actions against the U.S. that are essentially harmless, although expensive, like shooting down a drone, and the killing of Americans. His red line is the killing of Americans. He's been unambiguous about that. Now, the Iranians and most of the Muslim world, most of the rest of the world, kind of got used to, after 8 years of Obama, red line, schmed line, there's a red line there, I didn't mean that red line, I meant this red line kind of thing, and the weak, flim-flammy defense that the Obama team sort of tried to cobble together situationally. It was always situational. So they got used to that. So when the Iranian organization, the front group in Iraq, killed an American contractor on the 27th of December, they probably thought it was just going to, if anything, it was going to be another slap on the wrist. So when a couple days later, they storm the embassy grounds in Baghdad to protest and to riot, to not really protest. It was an attack. It was a coordinated plan. You know that because they stopped. They only went to a certain point and stopped. And real riots, real storming, real doesn't stop. It goes on and on until somebody gets killed. That's just how they work. That's the nature of humanity. So after both of those instances, they were feeling pretty good about themselves, so good about themselves and so good about how cocky they had been feeling and getting, that Soleimani thought it was a good idea and he was safe to go and travel to Baghdad. He wasn't. He's now dead because of it, and the world is a better place for it. And the world is a better place for Iran having responded the way that they did. We can call it weakly, whatever. They did what they had to do to save face, and to save their own asses. If more Americans had been killed in their missile attack, there would have been some hell to pay. Let's just leave it at that. So that's where we find ourselves. It is an unequivocal victory for the United States and a good thing for the world. And therefore, since it is a victory for Donald Trump and a good thing for the world on the watch of Donald Trump, our friends on the left hate it. Naturally. Because that's where they live. They are cynical. They are stricken with the penicillin-resistant strain of Trump derangement syndrome, and they cannot get it out of their heads. They will never accept that Donald Trump does anything good. They will not give him credit. They can barely choke out the words that they think it's a better world that Soleimani is dead, let alone say that the president made a good decision. So rather than attack the decision, although some of them are, they've decided to attack the decision-making process because they don't want to really address the decision. The crazier ones do, but the more sane ones don't. It's good that he's dead, but crowd out there that are trying to have their cake and eat it too. The lunatics on the fringe, which we have audio of, they don't even pretend. They're upset that Soleimani is dead. They're upset that Iran has lost a hero. They're upset that Donald Trump has protected the United States of America and American citizens. They're upset that Donald Trump exists. And on that note, we're going to get into all of the audio. There's not a ton of it, but the crazy audio that these liberals give us, if you will. Not really give us, sadly. It is what they're out there telling the world. They're really nuts. They're really insane. I don't know who they hang out with, but there cannot be a dissenting voice in the crew. There just can't be, because no one would advise them to go out and say these things to human beings outside of the safety of like-minded people. But before we get to that, another sponsor really quickly this time. Look, you're going to eat this weekend. You're going to eat probably every day for the rest of your life would be my guess. And that's a good thing. But if you don't feel like cooking or you're stuck in the office and you just can't get home, and when you get home, you just don't really want to make food, I've got the solution for you. That's DoorDash. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in whatever city you live in. Ordering is easy. You download and you open the DoorDash app. You choose what you want to eat and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only that, it's not just your favorite pizza joint, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities. So you might find a new favorite too. Try something new. Live a little. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada, our neighbors to the north. You order your local to-goes or choose from some favorite national chains like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, or the Cheesecake Factory and their massive menu. And you don't have to worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. And right now, listeners to this show get $5 off your first order of $15 or more when you download the app and enter promo code CALLER. That's right, $5 off your first order. Download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code CALLER. Boom, $5 right there for you. Don't forget the promo code CALLER, just the word CALLER, for $5 off your first order. You'll thank me for it, and you'll be full of deliciousness. And the world could always use more deliciousness. I really do use DoorDash all the time because sometimes on Saturdays I just don't feel like cooking. It's when it's movie night or something, and I'm just sitting there going, I just cleaned the kitchen. I don't want to dirty another dish. That's the thing that, like, I don't want to, after I do all the cleaning, I don't want to dirty another dish. Like, just let me have this time. Let me enjoy this time before. So use a plastic cup, use a paper plate. I don't care. Just let me have this time, damn it. It's pretty bad. But hey, man, that's who I am. That's what I do. All right, let's get to the audio, shall we, of these ridiculous Democrats. Just have a couple of cuts here. The first is Congresswoman Jayapal, or Pramila Jayapal. She's from Washington State, I believe, Washington or Oregon, one of those northwestern lunatic places up there where they're very, very progressive as their society is collapsing under homelessness, junkies, and Antifa protests. But they're very progressive. They're progressing right up to the precipice and then over the edge. Good on them. There was a big press conference of Democrats up on Capitol Hill, the progressive Democrats. They got together, the really nutball ones, the openly anti-American ones. And they all spoke of their disgust with President Trump and how dare he kill this wonderful Iranian general hero, this hero of her, the second in command. They were out idioting one another. Trying to call it assassination the most. That was the buzzword of the day. They assassinated Soleimani. They assassinated Soleimani. Like, no, they killed him. They killed him. They blew him up. They actually, if you want to be technical about it, his body is back in Iran, they say, but there's still pieces of him all over Baghdad, right by the airport. You could just go out there with a little Dixie cup and probably get 3-4 pieces of him to this day. Unless they have a really bad insect problem. Then, I mean, it'll be cleaned up by the weekend, but still. She was up there, and she's disgusted, and this idea is prevalent amongst the media and the Democratic Party, but I repeat myself. And it is essentially that we had no business killing Soleimani because there was no imminent threat. For Democrats, they're very much against preemptive action to prevent something from happening unless it's something they support. Remember net neutrality? We have to regulate the internet. We must do it because at some point in the future, internet service providers might start blocking websites, might start doing X, Y, or Z. They weren't doing it. They haven't done it, but they were all for preemptive legislation, regulation. At least that was the cover story. What it was really about is they wanted the ability to control the internet. They wanted to preemptively get the camel's nose under the tent, because once you start imposing regulations, then suddenly you go, well, wait a second, we're going to need to enforcing these regulations costs money. So we're going to have to just tax a little teeny bit so that we can pay for these regulations. And then it's going to be, oh, we got to do a little bit more regulating. We need a little bit more money. And then suddenly the government is taking over. They're all for preemptive regulation. They're all for preemptive legislation. They're all for preemptive action, except for when it comes to defending the United States of America and protecting Americans' lives. For them, the idea that somebody had spent a career, 40 plus years, 50 years almost, of killing Americans, masterminding terrorism, and killing hundreds of thousands of people, that's not enough to justify killing them, or in their vernacular, assassinating them. That's beyond the pale for the United States of America, unless they'd caught Soleimani standing over somebody in their bed with a knife. And the knife was in a downward motion. Think of it as, you know, the incomplete pass rule in the NFL. The arm's going back. It's a fumble. It has to be going forward. Once it's going forward, then it's all good. The knife has to be going forward, and it's an incomplete pass. Then, if the knife is going forward, then you can act preemptively. And good luck, you're not allowed to pull your gun first before then either, according to the left. You just have to sit there. Hey, you know what? You probably have to be stabbed a couple of times to really qualify in the minds of Democrats. So listen to Congresswoman Jayapal. And keep in mind that, again, according to our military, not according to the Trump administration, these are numbers that are kept by the military and have been a running count for a long time, including under the Obama administration, that Soleimani had the blood of at least 603 American servicemen and women on his hands. It's not even on his hands at that point. It's caked across his body, soaked through to the bone, marinated him. It has discolored his skin. He is so drenched in the blood of Americans. Now listen to Jayapal say that killing him was wrong. There was no justification whatsoever for doing it.
This is the result of reckless actions by President Trump of military brinksmanship. President Trump recklessly assassinated Qasem Soleimani. He had no evidence of an imminent threat or attack. And we say that coming from a classified briefing where, again, there was no raw evidence presented that there was an imminent threat.
603 dead Americans. No evidence of an imminent threat. No. He was done. His wish list was to kill 603 Americans, and he was just done. And in the liberal world, you're not supposed to be punished for your crimes, so why should he be punished for killing 603? As long as he wasn't going to do it anymore, and there was no evidence that, you know, because after 600, you really start to get bored of it, and you have to do, like, two or three more to make sure that you really got it out of your system. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I'm done. First of all, it's brinkmanship, not brinksmanship. Secondly, you're a monster. You're a moron. How dare they? They're defending a terrorist leader because Donald Trump killed him. They're honestly doing that. If you live long enough, they say you see all sorts of things. But I never in a million years thought that I would see not only one elected member of Congress, but dozens of elected members of Congress going out there and taking the side of America's enemies against the United States. I really didn't think I would see that. I always suspected that a lot of them felt that way, but they always seemed to be smart enough to hide it, to couch it in certain terms, to use little buzzwords, or as the left always likes to accuse the right of doing, using code words, using coded language, because that's what they did. You know, they didn't like this country. You just knew it, but they wouldn't come out and say it. They left it to the lunatics like Michael Moore. Then suddenly they let Michael Moore into the convention. They let Michael Moore into the president's box at the 2004 convention, where he sat happily next to Jimmy Carter. They now, you know, cater to the Michael Moores of the world. Michael Moore was on the outside. Now he's on the inside. That's how far the party has gone. So it shouldn't really surprise me that we have members of Congress coming out and saying, oh, look, killing 603 American servicemen and women is bad and all, but what was he going to do next? Who knows? Maybe he would have turned his life around and dedicated himself to planting trees to fight climate change or something. We've robbed him of his opportunity because his knife, his hand with the knife, wasn't going in a forward motion. Then it was wrong to kill him. They are honest. There's no other way to interpret what she's saying other than she is saying that he should still be alive and that we are in the wrong for having taken out somebody who killed more than 600 American soldiers. That's an elected Democrat. She is a one of the leaders of the House Progressive Caucus, too. So you get to see who these people really are. They show you who they are. They're open about who they are. It's just a matter of whether or not people are watching to pick up on it. Thank God for talk radio. Thank God for podcasts. Thank God for conservative websites that are here to point it out, because this won't make the nightly newscast. This won't make your local papers. But this is important because this is the soul and the heart and the energy in the Democratic Party. Speaking of the soul and the heart and the enemy of the Democratic Party, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, she always seems to find herself on the wrong side of history, as the left likes to say. You're on the wrong side of history. You're on the wrong side. I'm on the American side. You think the American side is the wrong side of history? And the answer is yes. Yes, she does. She's been active on Twitter, tweeting all sorts of horrible things and anti-American things. She does that all the time. It's anti-Semitism. It's so on and so forth. She's out there saying that sanctions, because the president announced, look, we're going to impose more sanctions. We're going to really continue to put the screws to Iran, the terrorist regime of Iran, economically. We're not going to let them off the hook, and that's good. But it's not good to Ilhan Omar because her loyalties seem to lie elsewhere, not with the United States. She accused, she accused Jewish lawmakers of having dual loyalties, or Jews in general of having dual loyalties to the United States and Israel. I'm not accusing her of having dual loyalties. I don't think she's loyal to the United States at all. She tweeted out about the president imposing additional sanctions on Iran, quote, "This makes no sense. Sanctions are economic warfare. They have already caused medical shortages and countless deaths in Iran. You cannot claim to want de-escalation and then announce new sanctions with no clear goal. This is not a measured response!" Exclamation point. Well, the clear goal is to penalize the government of Iran. That's pretty simple. Also, economic warfare. Sanctions are economic warfare. Now, if you just take her at her word, if you believe that sanctions are economic warfare, fine. She's opposed to economic warfare against Iran. It's pretty clear by that tweet. She opposes economic warfare, in her words, against Iran. What's also unambiguous is that she supports the boycott, divest, and sanction movement against Israel, which means, by her own logic, that she then supports economic warfare against our closest and really only true ally in the entire region, the only true democracy in the region, in the Middle East. She supports economic warfare against Israel. Now, that seems weird, doesn't it? Our friends must have economic warfare perpetrated on them, but our enemies, the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism, should not be subject to sanctions? Makes you wonder where somebody's priorities are, doesn't it? Oh, by the way, while at that press conference, of course, Ilhan Omar was at that press conference with all the progressive members. One of them, I forget who it was. I think it might have been, it wasn't Sheila Jackson Lee. I can't remember who it was. Was up there talking about is dead this and dead that. In the background was Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and somebody else. I couldn't see who it was. The shot was not wide enough. And they're whispering in the background to each other like kids do on group picture day, on class picture day in elementary school, you know, where you're, all right, everybody get up on the risers according to your height and stand there, stand at attention. And while everybody's getting together and they're barking out instructions about what to do, there's always a couple of people, and I know this because I was one of them as a kid, standing in the back, whispering to each other, cracking each other up, laughing, giggling, smiling. That's all well and good at class picture day. But when it is a televised press conference where you're trying to convey the somber nature of the moment and the seriousness of the time and the actions and the possibility of war, and you're out there trying to show the world how concerned you are, it's not a good look when you're behind the podium by a person. There's somebody at the podium. And you and your little school friends are whispering to each other and cracking each other up. That's literally what Ilhan Omar was doing. You can see it. Her and Rashida Tlaib are just like whispering. Like little schoolgirls. Because they don't take this seriously. This is all for show. It's for domestic consumption. They know their audiences. They know their base. Their bases are anti-American leftists. So they can't take this very seriously. They don't really care what any other member of Congress has to say. They're going to go up there, read their script, and then go away and fundraise off of it. So after giggling, I suggest you find that video because it's disgusting. And it sets up, if this were, too bad it's not a visual medium, that they're sitting there, they're giggling and whispering and giggling and whispering a couple of times. And then it comes time for Ilhan Omar to have her moment at the podium. And so she goes up to the podium and then she makes a ridiculous claim that she has essentially the herpes version of PTSD. All this talk of war is giving her PTSD, she says. PTSD is not something that, like herpes, that flares up. You either have PTSD or you don't have PTSD, even though you have herpes or you don't have herpes. When you're flaring up, you're flaring up. And when you're not flaring up, you're not flaring up. It doesn't flare up because of talk. It really doesn't flare up because you're giggling in the background. So it's not really super serious when you're sitting in the back giggling while all of this discussion is going on about something you claim to have PTSD for. It cheapens the plight of actual victims and actual U.S. service members who have real PTSD to be giggling in the background like a schoolgirl and then come up and say, all this talk of war is giving me an outbreak of PTSD. But don't take my word for it. Just listen to the little brat herself.
Thank you, Ro. I feel ill a little bit because of everything that is taking place. And I think every time I hear about I hear of conversations around war, I find myself being stricken with PTSD. And I find peace knowing that I serve with great advocates for peace and people who have shown courage against war.
Yes, remember to pour one out for the real victim there, Ilhan Omar. Oh, and I know some liberals out there will go, well, you know, she was a refugee. She did come from Somalia. There was a lot of war there. She did blah, 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 blah. She's been in this country since she's 12. And that's not what she's talking about. She's just talking in general. She's just making it up. She's just a fraud. She's just a liar. She wants to wage, in her words, economic warfare against Israel, but no economic sanctions whatsoever against the people of Iran, the government of Iran, Iran at all. What did they ever do? I mean, they killed some Jews here and there and some American servicemen, but otherwise, once you look past, you know, the mass murder that they committed against their own people and against people of the region, they've done nothing. This is who the Democrats are putting out. This is who they're following. It's not even who the Democrats are. This is who the Democrats are following. They're following them over the edge even further down and even to an even crazier point. God knows where this ends. Actually, we know where this ends. It ends in re-education camps, in gulags, and in mass executions, because that's where progressivism always leads to. It's just a matter of how quickly it gets there. That's why you've got to always be on guard for these nut jobs. Speaking of nut jobs, The View. I just want to play this clip. You know who Richard Spencer is? Richard Spencer is the white nationalist. We talked with him about him with Dinesh D'Souza when he was on the program in his documentary, because Dinesh D'Souza exposed how Richard Spencer is not a conservative. The media always call him alt-right because he's a racist and everybody on the right is a racist. So they have to say it's alt-right. He's alt-right. He's a racist. He actually is as progressive as any of the Klans. The Klans was not of the right. They were all these hate groups, whether they be the new Black Panther Party or the Ku Klux Klan, sit there. They want to use the power of government for their own purposes. They don't hate strong central government. They hate that they don't control the strong central government to impose their will on everybody else. That's a lot of things, none of which is conservative, but it's a convenient meme for the left to blame everything that is wrong in the world on their political opponents, especially the things that they're guilty of. So, boom, presto, change-o, everybody becomes right-wing one way or another, no matter, like Hitler, the socialist. Yes, the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Doesn't that sound like right out of the pro-liberty and individual freedom movement? Everything is a fraud. Well, Richard Spencer is now mad at Donald Trump, and he's been mad at Donald Trump for a long time because Donald Trump isn't a racist and isn't implementing the racist agenda that Dick Spencer lives for. Well, he's finally had enough after the attack on Soleimani, after the killing of Soleimani, because he is, of course, of the belief that all of this is being done at the behest of Jews, because Jews are evil. So he's now renounced Donald Trump fully and completely. What's funny is the ladies on The View celebrated this. Joy Behar goes, here's some good news. Richard Spencer, you know him, he's from the Charlottesville. Now he's had enough of Donald Trump. Like, welcome to the resistance, pal. I wouldn't be surprised if Richard Spencer ended up on The View at some point in the future, because they're that stupid, these people. Listen to this clip and tell me they're not celebrating this. They're celebrating a racist. Now, they celebrate racists all the time. They just don't often celebrate white racists. So this is, I guess, groundbreaking for them. Maybe this will be their Emmy submission clip. Listen to Joy Behar get, and the crowd gets, oh, yes, we've now got a racist on our team.
There was one small thing. You were saying, what's some good news? This is a tiny thing that I noticed. You remember Richard Spencer? He's basically the organizer of Unite the Right.
Lunatic.
The white nationalist group that was marching in Charlottesville. It was all in for Trump. Not anymore. Here's his quote. He tweeted last night, I deeply regret voting for and promoting Donald Trump in 2016.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. I mean, that's good. That's interesting.
Do you know why?
Well, because Trump, like I said yesterday, right? Trump ran on not invading and not being a warmonger.
That's what I'm talking about. This was.
Because Trump ran on not being a warmonger. That's why they're celebrating. Yay, we've got a racist on our team. Yay, we've got a racist on our team. Can you imagine these? What? How morally depraved do you have to be to go, oh, you know what? David Duke. Hey, Louis Farrakhan has come out and is now on our team. That's good news. That's huge. He brings with him a large constituency of people who hate white people and who hate Jews and who hate just about everybody. This is big news for the Democrats. Going to be a tough thing for the Republicans to overcome, losing the endorsement of Louis Farrakhan. I just love these people. They're so clueless. I don't think Joy Behar knows what she's doing. I don't think Joy Behar thinks. I think that's Joy Behar's biggest problem. I think that's the charm, if you will, of The View, is that it is a whole bunch of people not thinking, sitting around talking to people who don't think either, and just going, oh, wow, this is great. Okay, this is awesome. Let's do this. They're nuts. They're absolutely nuts. Okay, there is big news in the royals world, if you will. I don't think I'm going to have time to get to this Jillian Michaels story yet today, but I can get into it tomorrow. Hopefully it'll be slow. If I can get to it today, I will. But Prince Harry and Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, whatever the hell, Meghan Markle, they've decided to essentially retire from being rich people who just have to do a few public appearances every year to collect a couple of million bucks to pursue their dreams of being rich people who have to do slightly more, maybe somewhere else. They don't want the responsibility. They want all the money. The NBC News story, Prince Harry and Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, announced Wednesday on their own Brexit from the royal family. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex stunned their subjects with the announcement that they intended to, quote, step back from Buckingham Palace, divide their time between the United Kingdom and North America, and even start paying their own bills. Now, that'd be nice. Wouldn't that be, if you're a British taxpayer, wouldn't that be a pretty sweet deal? You freeloaders are going to, these massive landowners with all sorts of tax advantages on top of a massive salary and all the bills and everything paid for by the taxpayers. Now you want to go out and do it on your own. Of course, they're not going to completely do it on their own. They're still going to take their pay, but they just don't want to do any of the responsibilities. Quote, they said, we intend to step back as senior members of the royal family and work to become financially independent while continuing to fully support Her Majesty the Queen. Now, don't you love that? We're going to step back. We're still going to do the Queenie stuff. We're still going to, but we're not going to do any of our obligations. We want all of them. They're like liberals. And actually, they want to sort of work towards a progressive world. So they actually are liberals. They want all the benefits, but they don't want to do any of the work that comes along with it. Who doesn't? You know, I want all the pay for all the jobs that I have, but I don't want to do those jobs. I mean, shit, I don't even get a vacation day, so what are you going to do? But they apparently didn't tell the Queen about this. They announced the Queen allegedly found out about it on television, which while they still would like to receive their almost $3 million in stipends and their allowance to live off of before they were, as they start to work to become financially independent. Don't you love that? We're going to start working towards being financially independent. It'll be up to the Queen to decide whether or not she wants to pay them for doing nothing. I would like to think that the Queen would be more sensible considering how the feces hit the fan over every scandal and every wasted taxpayer dollar that they've already been involved in, including apparently buying Meghan like $500,000 worth of clothes. Imagine having $500,000 in wardrobe. To think about it, I'm not sure. I'd say I don't know that I have $500,000 worth of clothes. I know I don't have $500,000 worth of shoes because I have like four pairs of shoes and two of them are Converse All-Stars. But yes, quote, they're going to split their time between the U.S. or between North America, some are saying Canada, and the U.K. Quote, this geographic balance will enable us to raise our sons with an appreciation for the royal tradition into which he was born, while providing our family with the space to focus on the next chapter, including the launch of our new charitable entity. Now, this is the ultimate. You want to talk about white privilege? You want to talk about privilege in general? This is it. Their whole lives are a charitable entity. They're just the beneficiaries of it. And in exchange for all of their whims being paid for and massive estates being gifted them by the Queen and by ultimately the state, they have to occasionally show up at hospital openings and other things like that, do some actual charitable work. Now they want to say, well, we want to do our own charity thing. That's what we want to do. you're going to become financially independent by starting a charity? How does that work exactly? Because if you figure out the secret code for it, I would love to know that, you know, recipe. I've decided not to do anything for the rest of my life except give away money. I don't have any money, so people have to give me money so that I can give it away. And then I'm going to skim off a nice chunk of it so that I might live into the manner in which I have become accustomed as a non-working royal. The New York Post has a pretty hilarious write-up of this. So how's this for quitting your job? Abandoning every aspect you hate while continuing to reap the benefits you love. This, in effect, is what Prince Harry and Meghan Markle have done. In a statement loaded with confusing doublespeak, the couple wrote in part, quote, we intend to step back from senior members of the family, blah, 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 still support the Queen. None other than Queen Elizabeth is confused. According to BBC royal correspondent Johnny Diamond, the statement blindsided the entire royal family, and they don't know what this means either. Will Harry and Meghan keep their royal titles? Work to become financially independent? How long is that going to take? Will they continue to get an allowance until that happens? Where will they live while in the UK? In the Frogmore Cottage, the estate gifted them by the Queen, which they spent another $3 million in taxpayer funds renovating? They say yes. Can't wait to hear what the Queen has to say about this. All this smug and gross considering the British taxpayers are... Ooh, I was wrong about the estimate. While British taxpayers already spent $3 million on Harry and Meghan's wedding. So they paid $3 million for their stupid televised wedding. Since then, the couple has generated more headlines for feuding with William and Kate for exorbitant spending $500,000 on Meghan's wardrobe in 2018 alone, and for seeking the company of Hollywood stars for snubbing engagements, both public, last month's NATO reception at Buckingham Palace, and private, most recently the Queen's annual family Christmas gathering. Isn't that lovely? They don't want any responsibilities, but they want all the money. I mean, that's a sweetheart deal. If they're managing to figure out a way to do this, that could be their business. Right there is their business model. You want to become financially independent. You teach other people how to continue to roll in their salaries, their pay, their stipend, whatever you want to call it. Without having to do any of the responsibilities. That would be a sweet, I would sign up for that because I think that they'll end up being the experts on it. I can't imagine the queen saying you're on your own, pal, and having to try and figure out where to live in Quebec they'll probably end up in like Toronto or Vancouver would be my guess. Those seem to be the only, except for Quebec, but who wants to live with the French talkers? Those seem to be the only cities in Canada, if they do end up in Canada, that are, you know, cosmopolitan enough for these people. But you got to love this story. We don't want to do the job anymore. We just want to get the benefits. Piers Morgan has been ripping these people all over the place. There still, at least as of yet, isn't any word from how the Queen is going to react other than she was surprised. But I've never really cared about what the royals do. But I am kind of excited because they're very liberal, whiny people. Remember, we're only going to have one child because of climate change and all this other crap. And they want to dedicate themselves to progressive causes. I hope the Queen cuts them off. How awesome would that? Let's see. Not many people have asked if I'm okay, she said, with her eyes welling up, talking about Meghan. But it's a very real thing to be going through behind the scenes. They're apparently not happy about the negative press that they get for being jackasses. Here's a solution. You don't get that press if you're not a jackass. Going forward, they should have to pay for their own security, their own travel, their own staff, their own homes and upkeep and child care. As it is, they've made no secret of their plans to monetize and trade upon their status from spending their six-week holiday break. Who gets 6 weeks off from a job that doesn't really require much? In a $14 million waterfront mansion in Vancouver. Brokered by musician David Foster, who declined to say if the couple paid rent, to trademarking Sussex Royal, which allows them to slap their brand on everything from clothing to books to magazines to anything you can think of, really. They're just gross people. They're just gross people. Honest to God, I don't know what's wrong with... I mean, I wouldn't want to be royal just because it does seem like a massive intrusion. But you don't get the spoils without the responsibilities. And I hope that they learn this the hard way. Because I suspect if they learn this the hard way and the Queen says, all right, you're on your own, that this won't last very long. And then they'll have to be humiliated, crawling back and begging for grandma's forgiveness. I get it. I get that it's annoying. But if you don't tell your mother that you're doing this, you don't tell your mother you're doing, or your grandmother you're doing this, there's something fundamentally wrong with you. She's the reason you're getting any money at all, you piece of trash. Oh, man. The British crown, though, the royal family is lucky that the other family, the non-crazy ones, still exist. Prince William and Kate, they seem actually like decent human beings and not narcissistic losers. But that's what you get when you marry somebody from Hollywood, especially somebody marginally from Hollywood who was moderately successful. It just never works out well. Never date an actress, kids, or an actor for that matter. And on that charming note, that is all the time we have for today. I appreciate you listening and telling a friend and all that good stuff. What day is tomorrow? Tomorrow's Friday. Tomorrow should be good. Should be, fingers crossed, a very good interview with a very cool guest that we'll get into in-depth with. I've been semi-critical of this guest in the past, and I might bring that up with the guest. But first, the guest has to show up, so we shall see. You'll just have to tune in tomorrow to find out what the hell I'm talking about, which is pretty much like every other day. I'll see you on Friday. Have a great Thursday.
I find myself being stricken with PTSD.